Welcome to Jawa Jabber, a Star Wars podcast dedicated to spreading our own little slice of positivity throughout the galaxy. From the prequels to the sequels to every Disney Plus spinoff they want to throw at us, we're here to celebrate any time we get to spend in our favorite galaxy together, and we want you to come along for the ride. I'm David Wren, joined by my bro hosts Dennis, Kyle, and Matt. We invite you to sit back, relax, and enjoy our fully armed and operational podcast.
And this is Jawa Jabber.
Hello there, Star Wars fans, and welcome to another new episode of Jawa Jabber. I am your supreme leader, David Wren, and I am joined by my best friends and bro hosts, Matt, the radar technician.
A buddy of mine saw Matt take his shirt off in the shower, and he said Matt had an 8-pack, that Matt was shredded.
He's the most shredded radar tech this side of the Mississippi. Would you agree, Matt?
No comment.
No comment. Fair enough. Ladies, that was a no comment, just in case you're listening. So that's Matt, the radar technician. We've got Kai Nobi.
I've heard Kyle has the high ground, freshly back from Seattle, I believe, making waves in the realtor world, helping future realtors buy their dream home on Naboo, or maybe the new fresh city in Navarro.
Just don't buy that house on Camino, because Dennis is getting flooded out right now and he cannot join us for our episode tonight. So sorry, Dennis, we miss you. But, you know, as they say in Shakespearean times, the show must go on. So, you know, this is one of our first episodes without you. We miss you, buddy. But, you know, you're here in spirit and we're going to make you proud. So, all right. Episode 20, The Foundling, is what we're going to be talking about tonight. I know I really enjoyed this episode. I mean, it's redundant to say that I enjoy all these episodes. Kyle, you want to start us off with some behind the scenes antics?
Absolutely. So the director was none other than Carl Weathers for this episode.
Carl.
Exactly. He directed episode 4 of season 2 last season. The episode was written by none other than the dynamic duo themselves, Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau. And the director of photography yet again was Dean Cundey.
It's interesting because Favreau's written all these episodes, right?
Yep.
So far. Now, did he do that for every season?
The only episode he didn't write on was, I believe, season 2, episode 7, where Rick directed that one and wrote it.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yep.
All right. Awesome. And what the other Carl Weathers episode, that was the one with where they were escaping from the Imperial facility or something, right?
On Navarro.
Yeah.
She who shall not be named.
No, but we can name her. She's allowed to be named. Actually, did you see Katie O'Brien has been getting some Twitter hate, apparently? I don't know. It drives me nuts. Like, because, you know, the four of us come together and we just love it. And, you know, we live it, we breathe it, we travel overseas in 11 days to celebrate it. And I just don't understand why everybody's not that way. I don't know. That is not the way.
Online hate. I think it's just people, you know, unhappy in their own lives that are have to vent it some way. And that's how they do it. Because it's really easy to do it behind a keyboard. Like you say, I'm glad we come here.
Yeah, I guess.
We're pretty much positive and
right.
There's things we don't like, and there's always going to be things that we don't like the most, but...
Have we done an episode about the Bad Batch? Have we done an episode? No, I'm not going to continue. Okay. So, anyway. Episode 4.
Back to episode 4.
Season 3. Back to episode 4. I don't know, Matt, what were some of your initial thoughts? Like...
Well,
the storyline, Little Kimmel, like, you know, what do we want to talk about? Like,
so I liked the episode. It's definitely not going to be my favorite episode. I mean, I know you guys, I don't think like the way I talked about it initially, which, you know, thinking about how I did, I think I would reword what I called it because I labeled it as a filler episode. And I don't think it's truly a filler episode. To me,
I disagree with you. I
it probably wasn't the right
as a fan of television, right? Well, no, I mean,
but to me,
technically,
I think...
yes, but this storyline that they're doing is so focused on Mandalorian culture and all that, that I don't think it is truly a filler episode. But when it comes to, you know, your dogfights and your this and, you know, like your Imperial remnants and whatever, like, I guess it's technically a filler episode, but at the same time, it's not a filler episode. When you have 8 episodes in one season, you can't really make filler episodes.
Well, I mean, I feel like there definitely were filler episodes in season 1 and 2.
Well, sure.
This episode definitely offered more than those episodes did, but I think it kind of accomplished much of the same thing, just in a much stronger and better way. Of it, to me, it didn't advance the storyline. Different dynamics that were going on, relationships that were hit on, I think, there.
I love how you were talking about relationships. Like, those scenes with the Armorer and Grogu. Or even a couple weeks ago with Bo and Grogu. And, like, how they're taking the time to develop these relationships with everyone is, it's very interesting to me. And it's slower paced, but not in a bad way. I mean, we wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and watch it together before I have to go to work. And I'm not falling asleep. Like, I'm excited. Like, I'm hanging on every breath that the Armorer says. I mean, part of that is Emily Swallow's phenomenal acting behind a mask. Are we ever going to see her face? I doubt it. The one thing that always kind of makes me chuckle is and I've wondered this with other characters too, like specifically like R2-D2, Chewbacca. I don't know if you guys see where I'm going with this, but like the characters that don't speak English, or Basic, I believe it's called in our favorite galaxy. You know, these people have these long monologues and these long discussions, and the other characters, like a Grogu or a Chewie or even an R2, are like looking at them very fondly and listening. And you want to feel like they're gaining the information, but we don't know if they actually learn the information, right? Like, Mando does it with Grogu all the time. It's like, and I guess with Grogu and Mando, we know that he kind of understands him, because like when Mando had him do the magic hand thing, like with the ball and Ahsoka, he did it. And like, you know, he obviously went and found Bo-Katan, so he kind of was understanding how the navigation of the galaxy works. But I don't know, like when the Armorer was having the discussion with him before we went into the epic flashback, which we'll cover in a little bit, there were a couple times in the Book of Boba Fett episode where he was jumping, and my theater eye / movie eye was like, oh, okay, they have him on a string, or they have him on a pole. Like, you know, you could kind of see like his robe was pressed against the one side or whatever, and that's green screening at work and whatever. And like, you know, it happens, whatever. It's a little puppet. Like, I understand that. I don't care. He's jumping through the air and I'm excited. Like, this time I didn't get that. Like, it really looked even better. And it's a testament to the behind the scenes people, you know, because Book of Boba Fett was just about a year ago, you know, how they just keep improving how they're doing these stunts. And I'm happy to see Grogu outside of the hover pram getting Mando with it. Like, I love that they gave him the little thing that barely fits on his arm. And I'm thinking, how do they have one so tiny? Like the handcuffs. How did the stormtroopers in season 2 have the handcuffs for Grogu? Like, we never got those answers. Like, how did they ever get those handcuffs for Grogu?
Yeah, I would assume probably season 5 we would get his helmet for the first time or something too. I thought they were going to do it.
I was going to say we're definitely going to get a Grogu helmet, right?
Yeah,
there's no way.
No, I did like be, they have to. Give it
it'll
two
be
seasons.
It'll be interesting too, though, because I feel like he's got to be talking when he gets it.
Right. Because they brought that up in the episode. I thought it was very interesting how they brought that, you know, because little Kimmel was like, why isn't he have a helmet on? I have to wear a helmet. And I have to stop. He's actually not that bad of an actor, but I just love the fact that he's Jimmy Kimmel's nephew and I call him little Kimmel.
Yeah, he's not bad at all.
No, he's not. No, he's not bad at all. And even if he was, that's not our show. So we wouldn't say yep. it. You know what I mean? Like, we don't want to be those people. Yeah. Again, the fan base. Okay. We're not getting off topic. I'm sorry. But like, I just had a flashback to episode one and all those people with Jake Lloyd, you know, like the kid was 9 years old or 11. He was 11, I think. Or whatever, you know, like, and those people like ruined his life. I just feel so bad. But yeah, no, but I love how they brought that up. Like little Kimmel was like, you know, why doesn't he have to wear a helmet? And, you know, Din said something about, you know, you have to be able to speak the creed to live it or whatever. And I thought that was very interesting. I also enjoyed, speaking of the creed, they brought up, and this is the really interesting thing with Bo's character, I think, this season, like, she's totally warming up to the cult, the Children of the Watch. Like, you know, I'm not saying she's 100% gung ho. This is the way, but
I think
like,
she's warming up to the people, not necessarily right. like the creed itself of keeping your right. helmet on 100% of the time and all that kind of stuff. But
right, and I love that not only because you know our first way into this was Mando. But now we have Bo, and she's taking us as the audience through, like, you know, she's like, well, how am I supposed to eat if I have to keep the helmet on? And he's like, well, no, you have to find a spot and, you know, eat. And it makes total sense. Like, I never thought of it that way. Like, I think we've joked about it before. Like, yeah, how do they eat? Like, Grogu's just sitting there eating all the eggs. And, you know, how does Mando eat? Well, no, he goes to the other side of the ship and he takes off his helmet. Like, that makes sense. Like, if they can't remove their helmet, that's...
Yeah, and I think this episode really actually made Paz Vizsla's character a lot more likable.
Like, it, you know, really did, because...
Yeah, the relationship building they did
I remember not liking him at all.
Yeah, he was kind of a jerk.
He was a jerk. Like, you know, he was like, oh, my people had the Darksaber. I'm going to take it from you, Din Djarin. Blah, 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 blah. And, like, you know, he was kind of like a, you know, they call it a mustache-twirling... villain, because he didn't really have much of a story, and now, you know, they've given him this son, which one of you correctly guessed. Was it you, Matt, or Kyle? Was it you? I forget.
I think I guessed it, but Kyle might have too.
They kept showing him when he was getting attacked, and yeah, poor little Kimmel, he gets attacked again. Like, if I was that kid, I would run away from the watch. He got attacked
by... I'd
be
hiding in that cave all the time, I think.
Right. Like, he got attacked by the dinosaur crocodile thing. Now he got attacked by the pterodactyl. Was the pterodactyl storing him in his stomach? That was disgusting.
Yeah, I don't know if he just hit him in his mouth or if he spit him up or...
And it's funny, I've been reading a lot of online reviews about the episode, as I do, to prepare for our episode. And people have pointed out an interesting trend that I didn't quite notice before, but I definitely noticed in this episode. They're flying after the pterodactyl that has little Kimmel, and their jetpacks are running out. But then Bo, you know, in her amazing Mandalorian ship, flies after him. All right, cool, great, that's awesome. Bo's taking the creed, you know, she's going to prove herself to the Children of the Watch, whatever. And then she just comes back, and she's like, oh yeah, they have them. Like, they're in a nest. We got to go get them. Like, the sense of urgency feels a little off to me.
Yeah, that was my biggest complaint, too, because they get there and they're just okay with sleeping for the night. And
well, yeah, like, especially Mr. Vizsla, like, that's right. Like, that's his son, you know, like, is that really his? Like, if that had been Grogu, do you think Mando would have been sleeping at night? No.
Yeah, that was my only gripe with the episode, honestly.
Yeah, yeah, I had the same thought. And the thing, like, what was the reason for not going at night? Because it was going to be too hard to climb in the dark?
And the jetpacks were going to... Right, the jetpack was going to wake the monster or something, so they couldn't use the jetpacks.
Don't they have, like, night vision in their helmets? Could they have to use that probably to climb? And if they thought it was sleeping, wouldn't it be smarter to try to climb up there and surprise it while it's sleeping rather than where it could be awake? It didn't really make as much sense to me, but it didn't really bother me much. Like,
it's not like it ruined the episode for me, but it's funny because especially watching it the first time, it's something I didn't notice. really. And then, you know, when I was reading the reviews and then I watched it last night with you, Matt, and I was like, huh, yeah, all right. I can kind of see what they're saying.
I mean, I get why Bo didn't, like, immediately rush in to try to save him because she was by herself. And if she jumped in and, you know, something were to happen to Ragnar, the kid, then she would be to blame.
Oh, is that his real name?
Yeah, that's his actual name. Oh, okay.
I just want to call him Little Kimmel.
Yeah, I think if something had happened with him, then she would have came back and, I mean, she kind of would have been to blame. So I get why she...
Well, I was going to say, could you imagine if she came back and she was like, I'm sorry, the kid is dead. The, you know, the foundling is dead. And we'd be like, what?
One prediction Grogu... we had... Oh, what, sorry, go ahead.
That? No, go.
I was going to say, one prediction we had that we were way off was we all assumed that the episode was going to go back to Navarro and take
place.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of it was going to take place on Navarro, and we ended up being way off on that one.
We were way off
on
that one.
Well, the thing is, with season two, they only showed footage from the first four episodes. Season one's a different story because it's a brand new show. They had footage, I think, from the first seven or maybe even eight. But season two, we only had trailer footage from the first four. And then Boca Boba Fett, they only had footage from 3 out of 7 episodes. So,
right.
I mean, this is surprising that we're getting trailer footage this deep into the season, but I don't see the Navarro stuff being past this episode. They have to get rolling with Gideon's storyline to introduce the villain back into the show and that kind of thing. I think the next four episodes, they really have a strong list of directors for these last four. And it's going to be a roller coaster, I'm pretty sure.
Where do you think Gideon is? Like, do you think he's in custody?
I think he's scheming somewhere.
So he got out of custody, you're saying?
Yeah, I think he's out. Like, current day, he's out. But they have to flashback to show how he got out or who got him out. I'm guessing it's Katie O'Brien, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think they mentioned that he got sprung, you know, in the last episode for a reason. Even though they said, you know, story is that he
There's all sorts of rumors as to what happened. Right. Yeah.
But I think they dropped that for the obvious reason of that, yes, he is out in the wild and he's probably back on his ship doing his thing.
Maybe he's teamed up with Thrawn.
I wonder, and I might have mentioned this in the last episode, but one point I saw that kind of made sense was that seemed like an awful lot of TIE fighters.
Oh, yeah. You know,
like Gideon is kind of, I guess, termed as just like a warlord in the current time.
Yes.
Current timeline.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, like someone like Thrawn, like in the Legends universe at this point, like Thrawn wasn't really a warlord. He was more trying to pull the Empire back together. So he had a bigger force.
Yeah, Thrawn was in charge of a lot of fleets.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
So like the warlords have like smaller, you know, fleets at their disposal. And it seemed like kind of a lot of TIE fighters over the course of those. It just depends on your view of it, because that may seem like a lot of ships to some people and may not to others. To me, I think it wasn't like we saw 100 TIE fighters, you know. There was like what, maybe a squadron or something. Which really isn't,
you know, I mean,
a massive amount of ships. And, you know, when you talk about these fleets, which I always got really into this when I was younger, like knowing how big each of the capital ships were and like how many fighters they could hold, and like a Star Destroyer, like a, you know, like the regular normal size Star Destroyer could hold like 72 TIE fighters on it, I think was like the full wing or complement of ships. So like if a warlord has just one Star Destroyer, like he could theoretically have up to 72 fighters if, you know, he was fully stocked. Whereas I know Gideon didn't have a Star Destroyer though in season two.
A light cruiser.
Yeah, he had like, I can't remember the name of the light cruiser, but without looking it up. But yeah. So that I mean that ship's probably only carrying like 12 to 24 fighters, or yeah, maybe a little more. So.
Right. Okay. Well, but still.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to get like really technical, I don't know. I think it could still be Moff Gideon. You know, it's.
Oh, it could be. Yeah, definitely. It probably is. He's probably tracking Grogu.
But I do think that there's the potential for that Thrawn tie-in, though, towards the very end.
Oh, they're tying him in at the end of the season. There's no way. It's gonna be like the big cliffhanger to lead into Ahsoka, I think.
I would agree on that.
All right, so speaking of tie-ins and everything, let's talk about the Order 66 flashback. I don't care how many of these Order 66 flashbacks they give us in any of these shows, because every time we go back to that night, I don't know, it's just such a monumental moment in Star Wars history. And to see it, you know, 18 years later, from all these different angles and all these point of views, and they're all happening at the same time, it's just so epic. I love it. And each time they go into it, it's a new angle or a new Jedi or a new person or like, and it's just, I don't know, it's so beyond intriguing to me. And I also love that that YouTube edit is now going to have another 5 minutes to add to it.
I haven't seen that yet, so I'll have to check it out.
No, really? Oh my God. It's like all the Order 66 stuff, like from the video games, from everything. Like it's all tied in together. Kyle, what did you think of the Order 66 flashback?
I thought it was great, man. I love seeing the LAAT gunships again in live action. I love seeing more of Coruscant. Mm-hmm. I just geeked out seeing the elevators in the Jedi Temple. I mean,
yeah, that was
so cool. Uh-huh. I definitely didn't see Keller and Bet coming.
I thought
it was going to be.
Not at all.
We were talking about this privately. I thought it was going to be a new character they're going to introduce in Ahsoka. I'm not going to say any names, but I thought it was going to be the specific character I'm thinking of. And it was not that character. Kind of glad I was wrong. So that way it's a nice reveal for her show. But yeah, it was great. I mean, I'm glad, as much as I love Anakin, and David here is a huge Anakin proponent as well, it would have been overkill to throw him in The Mandalorian and kind of undercut the value of him being in Ahsoka. So I'm glad we didn't see him coming through those temple doors and it was just 501st troopers. But I thought it was great. It was well done. My only concern right now, though, is that Order 66 is this huge pivotal moment in the galaxy. I mean, it's massive. And at this point, we've seen more Jedi survive than die in Order 66. And again, I get it. I mean, there are thousands of Jedi, or at least 1,000, I think they say, during this time period. So it's very likely that a couple hundred survive.
Right.
But think about it. We saw, who did we see die in Revenge of the Sith? We can't really count Kit Fisto, Master Ten, and Eeth Koth because the Emperor killed them. But we see Plo Koon die, Ki-Adi Mundi, Adi Gallia, her species, Aayla Secura. I mean, that's it. We see like 4 or 5 Jedi die. And now we've seen Kane and Jared or Caleb Doom survive. We saw Keller and Beck. We've seen all these other people, all these younglings and Obi-Wan. I mean,
right.
It's feeling more like that it wasn't as monumental as it used to
well,
be.
Did all those younglings survive, though?
I mean,
did just Reva survive?
And you assume they all got out and then
now,
she became Inquisitor.
I don't know why. I assumed that she was the only one that survived.
Yeah, because I think I remember her saying, and they showed it, where she was laying amongst the bodies
of the dead. She kind of played dead or something,
you're right.
Yeah, no, that's interesting,
even,
Kyle,
even
that
still,
said
the
that.
Point still stands.
Oh, absolutely. And I understand. And it's funny, all I keep thinking of is Return of the Jedi, you know, when Yoda's dying and he looks at Luke and, you know, he goes, "When gone am I, the last of the Jedi will you be." Well, that's not really true. Because
what a bunch of BS that was, Yoda.
That was such BS.
Same thing in A New Hope, too, when Kenobi is talking to Luke in his hut, and he says, "Now the Jedi are all but extinct."
Obi-Wan and Yoda and then Luke are not the last of them, obviously. Because, you know, there's... And, again, it's how you keep the story going. I understand that. Oh, Cal Kestis is another one that survives in the video game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying, but as far as cheapening it, Kyle, I disagree. I don't feel like it's still this monumental, and there's still all these, I know we didn't see them, But I mean, it's implied that there's all these thousands of Jedi that do die. You know what I mean? I know we only see a handful of them get killed, but I would argue about the monumentalness of it being taken away.
I don't think it does that. I think that it undercuts it slightly. That's my only opinion.
I agree. Because, yeah, 18 years ago when the movie came out, you know, it was this, oh my God, this is the end of the Jedi, except for Luke and Obi-Wan and Yoda. And it's like, well, no, not really.
That's you have to live with, though. I mean, if you want Star Wars to continue and you want new stories to be told in these eras that we love, I mean, let's face it, like, a lot of us aren't ready for Star Wars stories outside of the Skywalker saga. That's another topic for another day, but a lot of us aren't ready for that. Not saying I'm included in that conversation, but if you want Star Wars to grow and evolve and have other stories, you kind of have to understand that we're gonna play with canon a little bit here, and that's, I'm okay with that.
Right, and I'm okay with it too. Like, I'm not saying I don't want to see those other stories, but I would agree, Kyle, I am not ready to give up this. I was saying that in 2019.
Exactly. When
Rise of Skywalker was coming out, I was telling Dennis, because at that time I wasn't talking to you guys as much at the time, but like I was telling Dennis, I'm like, I am not ready for this to end. Oh. And I was like not freaking out, but like I was like, I can't believe this is going to be the end, yada yada yada. And then they get to the red carpet and Kathleen Kennedy's talking about other movies that take place during the Skywalker saga, and we're like, wait, what? You've been saying since Celebration that this is the end, like this is it. And I'm like, I've been mentally preparing for this. And then all of a sudden she changes her mind. Now I was glad that she changed her mind, but I was like, you know, don't do that to me. Like, that ain't right.
No, I'm excited for Acolyte because it's a breath of fresh air, but right. They're not giving up the saga anytime soon, especially the fact that we're heavily exploring these 30 years in between Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens. I mean, that's just an extension of the Skywalker saga itself.
Yeah, even though they try to like kind of like talk about how Mando is kind of its own separate thing, like it's in a different area or whatever. I mean, it really is set in overlaps with Skywalker saga, like in more than just the fact that it takes place during it. You know, like as soon as they start bringing Luke Skywalker back into it and the New Republic and the Empire, like it's still tied to it, like it at the hip. You know, talking about the Order 66 flashback, though, like I did have the same thought as Kyle, that, you know, like, geez, here's another Jedi that survived, and it did make me giggle a little bit, but I agree that I don't think it doesn't really change a whole lot, you know, because a thousand Jedi are, you know, still died, so, you know, it didn't really bother me that much, but in terms of, like, the whole sequence itself, I thought it was awesome. You know, I was not expecting Kelleran back at all. And I didn't watch, you know, the YouTube show or anything, but I mean, I was aware of the character and stuff, and I never actually really considered that they would bring him into live action. I think it was perfect.
It was definitely a surprise, yeah. And the best way possible. I did watch a little bit of the YouTube show, and I thought he was really cool, and I was like, why can't they put him in something? Like, this would be really cool. I like this character, and I love that it was Ahmed Best. And, well, Dave Filoni has answered our prayers, and it's
I did awesome. See some criticism, I guess, that people thought they made him, like, too badass, because, you know, he was, like, really just giving it to the 501st troopers.
No, he's a Jedi. He's a Jedi master.
Well, and the other thing, too, is, like, I guess he was, I did a little reading on it, and I guess he was known as, like, a really, really good swordsman with a lightsaber,
yes.
And he had two lightsabers,
yes, he was.
So of course he's going to be a badass.
Of course he is, yeah.
And honestly, like, Ahmed Best deserves that, you know, like, him getting the
absolutely.
In that role in the show, like, I'm glad they gave him, like, a badass sequence where he really got to, you know, kick some butt and shine. Like, he deserved it.
I remember Celebration Chicago, and I went to the episode 1 20th anniversary panel. Then Ahmed Best showed up, and the whole stadium, like, stood up and cheered, and, like, the guy started crying, like, you know, like, in the best way possible. And it was just so, I don't know, it was just humbling to watch, and the fact that then he gets to do like a role like this in the same universe that once shunned him and whatever. And it's just, it's a great behind the scenes story that makes it into the universe itself. And I don't know. I loved it. I loved every aspect of it. I loved his costume. I loved his lightsaber. Like, I thought it was, I love that he saved Grogu. Did you guys happen to notice the little reference that they did?
What reference?
With him. So when he's meeting up the Naboo guards, for lack of a better word, because, you know, it was definitely a Naboo ship. It was the same. It's the same ship that Padme has, right? Like,
I think it was, yeah, the same ship from possibly from the Attack of the Clones.
Right. Yeah. It looks like that one that was on Tatooine. At some point, Kelleran says that some friends are going to help us get out of here. You know what I mean? Right. So then, like, they go and meet up with the guards and then they take the ship or whatever. But, like, you know, since they were from Naboo, what if Jar Jar, Senator Binks, had sent that ship to Kelleran to get him off the planet?
That would be a pretty cool tie. Yeah.
Right. Now, I'll admit that is not my original thought. I got it from one of these reviews that I was reading. I think that is a really, really cool, if not official, like a headcanon kind of thing, because I just, I don't know, tying those two together. And I mean, I instantly recognized the ship and I was like, oh, Naboo, but I didn't put the Jar Jar connection in there. And that, to me, that just kind of makes it better. And that's those deep cuts that Star Wars can do. And it just makes you smile. It just makes you feel good. I don't know.
Yeah. It's definitely a classy move by John and Dave, I think. Like,
right.
One, including him, but then also adding little details like that that are definitely done with reason. Like, they don't do stuff like that just accidentally or,
right,
with, you know, without the ton of thought that's put into it.
I mean, yeah. I feel like they're going to bring the Mandalorian cult to Mandalore. Maybe swing by Navarro on the way. It's hard to predict. It's just such a fun ride. Like, I don't want to get my expectations up and then,
yeah,
just because I like what they've been doing so far. But yeah, I mean, I think we're definitely going back to Mandalore. I feel like one of you guys said something about, like, once Bo kind of becomes the leader at some point, because I think they're leaning that way. I don't picture the rest of this series as Din and Grogu sitting on the Mandalore throne. You know what I mean? Like, training in his Jedi ways, you know, in Mandalore. Like, I think that's Bo's destiny. She's gonna kind of lead Mandalore or whatever, but, like, that she'll kind of welcome the Children of the Watch back into Mandalorian culture and maybe make it so, like, they can take their helmets off or something. You know, like, kind of adapt it a little bit.
I think this next episode, I was wrong going into this one, but I think I'm just going to say it again, but I think we definitely go to Navarro in the next episode and we, you know, have all that action with the pirates and all that. And then I think really after that, they do go back to Mandalore. And I agree with you. I think the whole covert goes there and there's some kind of clash with Moff Gideon and the Empire, you know, and I mean, it's going to be way more complicated and bigger than that, but I think that's kind of the gist. And the Mythosaur is going to somehow appear and be involved in this. What I found interesting was that Bo mentioned it, you know, to the armorer, because I was wondering if she was going to say anything to Din about it. But she obviously, you know, she tells the armorer, and the armorer clearly does not believe her. So the information really hasn't gone anywhere. And so you wonder if she's going to tell Din or not, and you kind of wonder why she hasn't yet. But I feel like he would be a little bit more likely to believe her because he knows her better, you know, and has more of a connection with her. So I wonder if in one of these next few episodes, if she'll tell him, or if she keeps it a secret, and then they're all surprised when the Mythosaur busts out again.
Do you think the armor doesn't believe her?
I mean, I feel like if she did,
I don't know. I didn't.
Maybe she would have made a lot bigger deal about it because she was just.
No, because that's like, not her. But that's not her character. Like, she's always been that way. Like, when Mando talked about the foundling and this and that and blah, 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 and you have to go here and you have to go this and blah, 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 you know, like all the mission of the week or whatever. Like, you know, she was always just like, this is the way. This is like she's very. Like, yes, I hear what you're saying, but this is what you have to do. Blah, 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 blah. Like, she's very calm. She's very collected. She's very whatever. I don't know. Like, I didn't get the impression she didn't believe her. I just got the impression that she is, like, tucking that information away. And then when that information becomes useful, she will use it to either her advantage or whatever. What if she wants to tame the Mythosaur?
Well, yeah, that's not exactly what I was thinking, but to a certain extent, I think the armor is someone who would refuse to think someone else could be more in tune with the mythological side of Mandalorian culture than she is.
Well, right.
Or have anything more to do with that than her, because seeing the Mythosaur again, taming the Mythosaur would make you the ultimate Mandalorian. You would be the ruler of Mandalore. There's no doubt about that. It supersedes a Darksaber. The armor is someone who strikes me as someone that would refuse to believe that Bo-Katan saw the Mythosaur. Even if deep down she does, she would refuse it.
And I think I can kind of see what you're both saying. And it just the fact that she tried to make Bo, like, you know, implied that she could have been seeing something, you know, or imagining it. Like, that leads me to believe that she doesn't possibly believe what she's saying, because you know I don't know why she would, you know, make comments saying like, are you sure you saw what you saw, because it's pretty easy to, you know, imagine it.
And okay, while we're talking about her, how is Grogu gonna walk around with that big old circle thing under his coat? Like, really? Like, come on, he's got the Beskar shirt and now he's got the medallion that's the size of him. Like, he's not gonna be Jedi jumping with all that weight on him. Poor kid.
I thought it was kind of interesting. They made just like, I mean, it's essentially like a breastplate, and they made it round, right? You know, rather than like, you know, typically they're kind of
it's supposed
to your body a little bit, but
I forget the name of it, but it's supposed to go up on your chest, like as a medallion. Like I looked it up last night, but like it goes like up on your, like, not many of them have them. Like Mando doesn't have one. I mean, I'm sure maybe one or two of them have it, but like it, with ancient armor and stuff, it goes like up near your chest or whatever. And it's supposed to be to further protect from like bullets or whatever. But I mean, yeah, that thing covers his whole freaking body.
Cause I mean, he does have the Force to help him.
I mean, he does have the Force. I know that's true. But like, I think he should just stick that on the side of the hover pram or something, you know, like, there you go. There's my idea. We'll just stick it on the side of the hover frame.
What, and I'm trying to remember, what signet did she put on it? Was it the mud horn?
She put the mud horn, yeah, because they're the clan of two.
Right. Okay, that's what it was.
I liked that conversation with the armorer and Bo, you know, when she asked, she's like, am I allowed to wear the Mythosaur? And she's like, yes, the Mythosaur belongs to all Mandalorians and blah, blah, blah. Like that was good. I liked that.
Yeah, and I think it shows, like, you know, well, her, the armor, and Paz Vizsla are treating Bo as, you know, like an equal member in their cult now, at least a valued member. And it seems like they've kind of let go the fact that they thought Bo basically was part of the reason Mandalore got destroyed. Which I do find it kind of interesting. They just kind of let that slide. Like,
well, no, I think she's
like, it's no big deal, but.
No, but I don't think it's that it's no big deal. I think it's she's proven herself.
Yeah, they did a lot in this episode with the building of those relationships. And I think it's definitely, you know, unless you really sit there and think about it and analyze it, you might watch the episode, not really think about it. And then, you know, down the road, 2, 3, 4 episodes down the road, it's going to hit you and you're going to realize how much this episode really kind of helped evolve those relationships. And so I think it was definitely much needed. And I thought it was definitely one of the best parts of the episode.
Yes, by the end of the season, what is our motto going to be? There are no filler episodes, just filler people. Kyle, did you have anything else to add, bud, before we wrap up?
I don't think so. I'm just stoked for the next episode. Peter Ramsey's directing. Bryce Dallas Howard after that. I mean, I think
yes, Bryce.
Some treat.
Do you think she'll show up at Celebration?
Bryce Dallas Howard.
Maybe they'll announce. Maybe they'll announce a new movie or a TV series.
I mean, she needs her own movie at this point. She's proven herself.
She definitely needs her own movie.
Literally every other director in Hollywood's gotten a shot at Star Wars that's been canceled at this point. So just
right, why not her? Why not her? She's already in the family, like, and she loves it, and she does good work, obviously, because we all love those episodes.
The only thing is, there isn't a specific Mando panel this time, so I don't see them flying her out there just for a showcase, especially if, because the showcase will just be a brief overview of Mando so far and or Acolyte. You know what I mean? I don't see them bringing her to London for that.
I don't know, but we've only got about 3 weeks until we know, and it's a very exciting time to be us.
Amen.
This is the way.
This is the way. All right, so that is going to wrap up our episode for tonight. All right, hang on, because I'm channeling Dennis. Please give us a follow on our social medias. We've got Facebook, not Twitter, Instagram. Dennis does this way better than me, so sorry. But anyway, the point of Dennis's spiel is always to follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Send us a message at our jabberingjawas@gmail.com. Let us know if you like the show. Please interact with us. We're trying to get our Facebook page up and running. We're going to be posting live videos from Star Wars Celebration in London in the next couple of weeks. That's going to be a lot of fun, and that's going to be new for us. So, yeah, just keep it tuned to Jawa Jabber. That plays exclusively on Utini Radio. And may the Force be with you always. This is the way.
This is the way.